Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Glad you're still with us.
So excited to have joining us on the program today, Representative Ryan Wilcox. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, we love. I want to introduce you to our listeners. So you're a Weber County resident, am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and in the House of Representatives, District 7. Just give our listeners a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I grew up in Weber County in a little town called West Weber on a dairy farm. So our family milked dairy cows.
Love it.
About 200 head of cows when I was a kid. So we had rotations with that. I did the job. I didn't love the job like my little brother did. It's, you know, when it's your turn, it's getting up at 3:30 in the morning and you milk from 4 to 6, 6:15. You clean up by 6:30. Grandma makes you awesome breakfast up the lane, get cleaned up and go to school, and then come back and do it at 3:30 again in the afternoon, try to be done by dinner. Summers are incredible on a dairy farm.
Yeah.
Right? It's staying up all night when it's your turn to water, and it's when the things are in the mud, and I'm not sure exactly what I can say on this because it's on public radio. But when the stuff hits the fan, right? Yeah, everybody's working. The cows get out, all that kind of stuff.
It begs the question, how this prepared you for politics?
I got some questions about the farm first before we move on from there. Yeah. So did the farm stay in your family? Is it still an active dairy farm?
Yes, it's not a dairy farm right anymore. That's a change, but we've got, we're raising potatoes and onions and all the things. Our family's been farming that land for 150 year status in the 90s.
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
So since the pioneers arrived, our family's been farming that same land.
So that must influence your thinking about water.
Oh yeah.
About infrastructure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and frankly, my political philosophy. And this is like, if you want to understand.
Well, don't jump there yet.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We want to know more
so
about
water,
you.
Yes. Water was the first foray of my life, of my family's life into politics.
Okay, interesting. I can't wait to hear more about that.
Yeah.
So big family, did you say?
Yeah, I'm the oldest of six.
Okay.
Both of my parents are the oldest of six. My dad grew up in the Ogden Valley, and my mother out, of course, in West Weber, and yeah. So,
and did she mostly work at the on the farm as well, or did she have a town job?
Yeah, there was no such thing as a town job.
Yeah. Well, there was for my family. My family had a farm. It was out in rural North Dakota on the North Dakota-Montana border. I'm the daughter of a farmer's daughter, so I never actually lived on the farm.
Jeez, I'm feeling like an urbanite compared to the two of you.
Typically, I mean, when my uncle took it over, one of the people in the family typically worked in town, right? So my aunt worked at the bank. My grandma worked at the hotel. Like, they're, shared responsibilities.
So when my mother got older, right, she did work at the bank
there was a town job.
Well, when she was in college, right? But generally speaking, and to emphasize this, and town trips for our family, it was like a once a week exciting thing for them out in there, right? Like everybody went once, they carpooled, they did the thing. Now, when I was a kid in the 80s, it had obviously changed a little bit since then, right? And we would go in more often than that and whatever. But that cultural sort of community feeling of, the most exciting part of my week in the summers was when my grandpa, which is actually my great-grandfather, would take you into the stockyards of the old fairgrounds.
Yeah.
You got to go in with grandpa. That was his thing with you. We'd go to the stockyards. We'd buy and sell cows, whatever we were doing. And then he'd take you to Dick's Cafe.
Yeah.
That was the biggest part of the treat, to take you to Dick's Cafe with grandpa.
Order whatever you want.
Yeah. He'd always buy you a treat after,
Natalie, let's just remember, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Sugar House area of Salt Lake. My father was a physician, youngest of 11 children. But, I'm basically a Salt Laker.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about farming.
Yeah.
Except for an economics of it.
That's right. Yeah, I've talked to you about farming.
But it's interesting to me, Ryan, just as we were introducing you to the listeners, Ryan's going to be with us for several programs while John Dougal's on his hiatus. But Ryan, what made you a conservative? What brought you from a farm to being a limited government guy?
Yeah, I think that's it. I hinted at it a little bit ago, but So my great-grandfather, really starting with him and his father, they served on every water board that exists in the state of Utah, right? If it was major decision-making, started with Grandpa Lou, was his name. And then his son, my grand, we call him Grampy. To separate him, we didn't call him great-grandpa and grandpa. It was Grandpa and Grampy.
Okay.
Hey, so Grampy, of course, did that too. And Grampy, and I thought about this a lot, Grampy was more of a classical liberal. He, you know, more of a libertarian.
Okay.
Leaning and from his own life experience, but a lot of it had to do with government coming in and trying to tell him how to run his farm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And his life.
Personal freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big motivator for your service.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering, so you work with Intermountain Health.
Uh-huh.
What do you do for Intermountain?
Yeah, I do federal health policy for Intermountain these days.
So we got a healthcare guy, which relates to what Shireen's interested
in. I'm interested in that too.
Yeah.
And just to keep turning this a little bit to our listeners and Shireen, have you weigh in, but you have a, you know, in my estimation, you have a really important role on Capitol Hill. Are you on the Rules Committee?
Yeah.
That's one big deal.
That's
you're
one of them.
Chair of Business and Labor.
Or law enforcement. I serve on Business and Labor.
Okay, and chair
but
of
I chair law enforcement and criminal justice.
Yeah. Okay. So can you just tell us really briefly, I think for us, Natalie and I, we care about this and immerse ourselves quite a bit, but could you just in a pretty plain language way explain what happens at Rules? What's Rules Committee and why is that important?
Yeah. So process-wise, and this is sort of a weird part of my legislative life and history. I was an intern before, like the year that I ran.
Oh my goodness.
Right? Like I'm, that's like if there's like a weird footnote in the intern program, I am the only one that's ever gone from intern to legislator in the same year.
And who did you intern for?
For Kerry Gibson.
Okay.
Okay.
This and is terrific. So, I did not know this about
so
you.
So I was an intern in the 2008 session and I'd worked like one-off stuff years before that. But I got to see as an intern, as an older intern too, right? I was getting ready to go to law school. Like, this was not my life plan. But I got to see up front, all right, this is how this works. Like, this was fascinating to me. I'm writing speeches. I'm doing all things interns do. But I'm like 10 years older than all the other interns. I was 30 years old. And before I finally decided what I wanted to be when I grew up. And then I'm watching this thing happen and realizing the importance of the process itself. And so I really studied it. And so by the time I got elected and ended up not going to law school because I got elected, it was bizarre life choice. Anyway, I started to understand really how much was affected by that. By my second term there, just studying all the rules, making sure I knew how to maneuver and get the things done that I cared about that first term. I was the vice chair of rules my second term.
That's amazing. And it's important because it really controls what makes it to the floor.
Yep.
People often say, or if you're kind of in the world, right, we hear that things are stuck in rules.
Yeah.
And what that means is that it is really that kind of gatekeeping point where it's decided if things should proceed. And how do those decisions get made?
Yeah. Nothing in the legislature happens by one person. That's the first thing. No matter how many times people think that. Right. If it's the Rules Committee, you got to have a majority on the Rules Committee.
Yeah.
To move anything.
Bipartisan.
It's a bipartisan committee, or it's on the House. So, I talk about those magic numbers with kids all the time. It's 37, 15, and one. You got to have a majority of the House, 15 senators, because there's 29 of them, and you got to have the governor. And if you can get those magic numbers together, then you can do anything. But same thing in rules. And really how that sifting works is it's a lot of study. You got to be willing to do more work than the other members of the body because you're sorting through everything. And it's not, sometimes people think it's just a policy thing. Most of the time it's not. When something's stuck in rules, there's a process problem with whatever it was. And it's not ready to go.
So last week we talked about some of the governor's comments around how many bills there were this year. And he said,
this will be fun. I love that you're going to ask us.
Have fewer bills. So, I mean, it sounds like from just a workload perspective, you might be on board for that. But
not.
from a philosophical
absolutely
perspective.
Not on board
yeah,
with
tell
this.
Us, tell us what
you
you're
like
thinking.
You like the volume.
Okay, this is the thing. So I did 6 years in the House. I was like the rev and tax chair, which you probably would have had fun with when I left and ended up in Senator Lee's office in D.C. for about 5 years. That experience has completely changed my perspective. I now work on with the federal government, right, in my day job, and obviously since working for Senator Lee for so long. I've watched this problem in D.C. over and over. And what you end up happening when you artificially limit those is you have the single subject rule problem that Congress has right now, where we dump 1,000 things into every bill that has nothing to do with it. We pass all sorts of, I'm telling you, like you go through the list, it'll make your head explode. That is just, it's just wrong. It's people can't vote to fund the government.
Without voting on a number
without
of
voting
things.
For 1,000 yeah. other things that they completely disagree with, that their constituents don't support.
Yeah.
So, no.
Or that they may not even have read.
Yeah. Like, so this worry, honestly, it's artificial. If people are doing the work on, I don't care how many bills, 500 bills, we're already limited because we have the shortest session in the country at 45 days.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do with the amount of time you have, and there's only so much prep time to do it. But if you have people, also you're going to notice last year, we had more bill files filed earlier in the year than ever before, which means your representatives, your senators, were working early at this job they get paid nothing for throughout the rest
right.
of the year.
I mean, you do get paid, just not round, not year round.
You
yes.
get literally nothing for that sure. throughout the rest of the year. They're doing that because they care. Those people that are doing that care about that job, that responsibility of representing you.
Yeah.
They're putting the work in. If they get it done and it's the right policy, that's literally all I care about. If it's the right way to go and the work is done, then let's vote on it.
Yeah.
I love it. We're getting straight talk from a Utah legislator on both sides of the aisle. We're going to take a short break. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and Representative Ryan Wilcox. Stay tuned.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
And Ryan Wilcox on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is both sides of the aisle. We are so excited to be having a conversation today with Representative Ryan Wilcox, who's sitting in for John Dougal, who's a candidate for the 3rd Congressional District. Getting to know you a little bit better, Ryan, but also talking politics.
Yeah.
And since you're a very experienced legislator, have seen it all, I just want to continue to talk about some themes from the 2024 legislative session. Yeah. I'll start with Big League Utah.
Sure.
He played a huge role there. Shireen, are you familiar with the role he played?
Well,
like I got to see him in action.
I'd like
he was
to
the
hear
guy.
More about it.
He was the guy.
So I'll let you know. We've had some differing opinions on this program about the role of government in funding these kinds of projects. But would love to hear just a little bit about your role in it. Kind of broad brushstrokes. What's going on in now that we have this legislation passed, what can people expect or look forward to? And then maybe we'll weigh in a little bit on our political takes on it.
And
sure.
And you and I are on the same side on this one, just FYI.
Sure.
So it's me and you against Shireen here.
Not even true. I was a little bit with Dougal, but I also believe in these kinds of investments.
Core investment.
Yes,
okay.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, like a lot of, in fact, almost any major piece of legislation that comes through the system, certainly in the conversation in the public and with the media, the truth lies somewhere else. there's what the language says, and there's, you know, the intent of those who are working on it. What often gets portrayed in the media gets lost in translation, let alone in the blogosphere.
Hey, Ryan, echo that point. You know, a lot of times whenever you know a lot about a subject and then you see it in the media, you're horrified.
Yes.
And, a lot of people have had that experience. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
So, they do a good job, but it's just not always like.
Last week, for example, I get a call from a reporter at the Tribune who had already published an article, hadn't called me or anyone else, and there were just several factual issues. Mm-hmm. But after the conversation, to their credit, after the conversation, not only was the article changed, but the headline was changed, which is not often.
Responsible. Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so wait, back us up and tell us.
Yeah.
Where are we now? How did you get involved in this? And what can voters expect? What did they get with this bill?
I got involved because I got a call from the speaker and the majority leader about a year ago, at least the political side, how I got involved, asking me to run point on the Major League Baseball project.
Yeah.
Right. What that would look like. That I was already involved, weirdly. They just didn't know that because I had reached out to the Miller Group. I'm a huge baseball fan.
Okay. Did you play baseball in high school?
No, not in high school.
Okay.
Kid.
Just around.
Yeah. I wasn't good enough to play in high school.
And how much do you love the movie The Sandlot?
Yeah. I mean,
because
I mean, it was shot. Wendy Pampfer Corn, as an icon, the Beast.
Yeah.
You know, it was shot in Ogden. That's, I mean, that's part of it too.
Well, and Liberty
right?
Park.
And Liberty,
let's not mess
around. It was shot, well, beyond that. Yeah.
That's
true. It was shot in the backyard of some neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, not just that movie, but baseball itself is, to me, it's part of what America is. Like, it's America's pastime for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, we had teams back here as early as 1862. Right, organized professional level clubs that were playing. It's part of Utah's culture. I mean, there's a reason why the phrase is baseball, America, and apple pie.
So you reached out to the Miller Group because you were interested.
Yeah,
in it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I reached out to Kelsey and Amanda and the crew and Steve and said, hey, however I can be helpful, let me know.
And then you get a call.
And then a few months later, whatever it was, asking if I would do that. It was one of the easier assignments I've ever accepted.
I'm sure. Okay, so what are Utahns going to get? What do they get with this bill? What do they get with this legislation?
So the first thing is we a lot of study. When you talk about like where bills go, that was last May, right? That conversation. A lot of work goes in before you see anything that publicly talked about or anything. At that point, the Miller Group had already announced their intent, right? Did a ceremonial kind of thing, but they didn't even own the land.
Yeah.
That was, you know, being talked about. And one of the things, this goes back to my prior legislative life.
Mm-hmm.
I was responsible for the area of Fair Park. And we, at the time, when I served, so it's been 2010, 11, 12, that time frame, we were talking about shutting it down completely because it just wouldn't pencil.
Yeah.
We had major crime issues right at then, let alone how much worse it's gotten. It just didn't make any sense. And we were
talking.
It's
in public ownership. It's not
ours.
Providing
it's
a lot of value.
Already.
Underutilized.
We have beautiful historic buildings that we weren't able to maintain because it wouldn't pencil without massive subsidies from the state. And so it went back to that. How do we preserve that for the long term? If we decided we're going to keep it, how do we preserve this historical asset? How do we take care of it? And then you have the Jordan River. The Jordan River, all as you may or may not know, the audience probably does, that all Utah, all water is public water, and it's owned and managed by the state, right? So we have permitting that allows you to, quote unquote, own water, right? That's, you have water rights. You have rights to use water. That's what you really own is the right. You don't own the water. Yeah. The state owns the water, meaning the public. So we have this responsibility with the Jordan River that's also been a similar frustration, meaning in both environmentally as well as major crime issues to the point where we have this beautiful asset that hasn't been able to be leveraged because of all of the dangerous folks that have hung out in that area and sort of made it their home. So we're dealing with a number of issues that we're trying to get a handle on. And I quickly realized that this was less about my childhood love of baseball and more about how do we preserve this state asset for the future.
So this is the first really critical point, because people characterize it as an investment in an arena or in baseball or giving money to wealthy people.
Yeah.
And really what we're talking about is collective investment in the future of Utah.
Well, and think about what's on the other side of the street.
Yeah.
Right? Because the other side of the street is an environmental site, an environmental remediation site, I should say, in a power plant that's been decommissioned.
Yeah.
And there's...
And that's, to be clear, that's on the other side of the street from the Fair Park. So
that's
if
correct.
You're driving
North
down
Temple.
North Temple,
uh-huh.
So this would be everything to your south, which, and I should say, I mean, we could talk about crime in greater detail at another time, but I'm a regular runner through the city and I run the Jordan River Trail, still run the Jordan River Trail. There's a lot of beauty and there are a lot of safe spaces. I think people need to, you know, for themselves, figure out what they feel comfortable with. But we do have, I think, a huge opportunity for investment along North Temple. So I'm really, I don't know. There are parts of this that are exciting to me. Keep going.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you're still able to do that. I've heard from a lot of West Side residents who don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that site in particular on the other side of the street that, you know, we've, it's just been an industrial site. And it's a coal-fired power plant in the heart of the city, like between the airport and downtown, and it's not going to be that anymore. So there's an opportunity for us to decide, all right, what do we do with this property?
Yeah.
Now, the state doesn't want to own that property. The state, you know, it's the private sector thing. I'm a classical liberal leaning guy. Like, here, let's see what we can do with this. But the most exciting part about this for me in all of these negotiations has been how we've been able to identify the priorities both for the state interest, the community, and the private investor, such that we're looking at now a $5 billion investment in the west side of Salt Lake's capital city between the airport and downtown that immediately starts that rehabilitation on the area surrounding the Fair Park, immediately starts the remediation this month on the environmental site now that it's closed, now that we passed the bill and the session's over.
Yeah.
And then preserves into the future the opportunity for a state asset that will be constructed potentially. Now, again, everybody's focused on the baseball stadium, but all of the other stuff happens now. The improvement for public safety, the improvement for the environment, the protection of the state asset, all of that happens now. That investment is triggered not by the state of Utah, but by the private developer now. If we get sometime in the future, before 2032, a signed franchise agreement from Major League Baseball that says we get our own team, then the state portion of the sales tax that we would otherwise already collect, nothing new for anyone else out there. No, we're not raising your taxes to do this. The portion that would be collected in the development area in the Fair Park District will then be leveraged to build a stadium.
Yeah. So I think what's hard for people, and I'll say this, like I'm supportive of this in the sense that I think that it should be downtown. I'm really excited that it's downtown or right on the edge of downtown. I think reasonably people would say within a couple miles is downtown. I think that's good. I think that this is an area that's been longstandingly disinvested in. And there, like when you go back and look at the historic redlining maps of Salt Lake City, those communities were our redline communities right here. So we know that there's been generation after generation of disinvestment. We also know, I'm glad that you brought up the environmental issue. We talk about frequently on this show that a kid born where I was lucky enough to have my kid born, like on in the lower Avs, has a 10-year longer life expectancy than somebody born in Glendale or in Fair Park. So we know that there are huge differences in quality of life, in investment in community, in everything from the way traffic moves through to trees, right? All of those different things. So I think this is a real opportunity that we have to see a different investment and growth in this community that deserves it, long deserved. I also understand people's concerns that it's, you know, furthering conversations around gentrification, that it feels like we were able to materialize $1 billion for something like this, but have a hard time funding social services to the level that they may need to be funded at. And I just want to say that I can hold all of that and still be excited about the idea of a Major League Baseball team. And I just want to know, Ryan, what do you think the team should be called?
Forget everything else I just said.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to not respond to all of those other things, but
you don't. We don't have time today. We'll keep talking.
Golden Spikes, I think, is a the Utah Spikes. You know,
Natalie,
is an
do you have a
easy.
The Spikes,
I like that
one. I mean, I'm into our honoring our mountains,
entendre, right? Like with your cleats, your baseball spikes, and the whole.
That's nice.
You know, clearly calling out.
I could be Peaks, Utah
Junction
Peaks.
City, yeah. And the you know all okay. of that
I love
stuff.
It. But yeah. But here's what I love for our listeners: everything you just described, Ryan, was really nonpartisan. It was just sort of like community, you know, development, problem solving, thinking, prioritizing needs and things. And I really love that about that. That still lives in our state. Like we still.
Well, And so many folks have this idea that we're giving a bunch of money to the Millers or anybody else is just flat out false. So let me just say it here. $0 is going to the Millers, even if we get the stadium, right? That stays with the Fair Park District, which is a state entity. It's a political subdivision of the state of Utah, charged with management of that area and protecting that area and that state asset that, again, we would otherwise all be responsible for funding. Every single one of those buildings are ours. They're a state asset that are our liability, our responsibility for already. So it's a fun way to do that by creating this mechanism. We are allowing for private and encouraging a private investment of, again, $5 billion over the length of the project, with really spending money that we would have otherwise already had to spend.
And these opportunities only come once in a blue moon.
1992 was the last time they talked about expansion.
All right. Well, we have to wrap up the program today. I hope we've given listeners a good taste of what's ahead. In our next program, we'll talk more about the left and right politics of both sides of the aisle. How does that sound, Shireen?
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much, everyone. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Garbani, Ryan Wilcox. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.